Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 340, Mind Jihad, Islamofascism and Geopolitics. This is being recorded on December 9th of 2001, and as I stated in the first half of the program, I do not want to be misunderstood as characterizing Islam as fascist. That is not the case, but there are profound elements within Islam that are not only fascist, but associated with and inextricably linked with the worldwide fascist community. This is a program dealing with the events of September 11th and surrounding factors, and this is a continuation of that series. We're going to resume with an element of discussion that we looked at in side one of this program, namely Johann von Leers, who was Goebbels' right-hand man for anti-Semitic propaganda for the Third Reich, Goebbels being Joseph Goebbels, the Third Reich's propaganda minister. We're also going to take a look at his worldwide links. Ultimately, Johann von Leers went to Nasser's Egypt under the Skorzeny / CIA mission and became the director for the Institute for the Study of Zionism for Nasser, basically a key anti-Semitic propagandist, along with many of his fellow Third Reich alumni. And one of the people who worked with von Leers in Nasser's Egypt was Alfred Huber. Now, Ahmed Huber, an alleged associate of al-Qaeda, certainly a member of the board of directors of an alleged al-Qaeda funding conduit, and an individual who was also closely associated with the Holocaust denial movement and the German NPD, the top German neo-Nazi party, and the associate organization of the American National Alliance, the publisher of not only the Turner Diaries, but also of Serpent's Walk, that I've used many times on this program. We're going to I'm going to do the best I can under the circumstances to explain a little bit about why or how elements of Islam happen to be associated with the worldwide fascist movement. To make a very long story very short, this is a manifestation of what German theoretician Karl Haushofer called geopolitics. When Germany was attempting to oust the United Kingdom from the Middle East and to gain control of the oil supplies, when Germany was also attempting to liquidate the already growing Jewish community in what is now called Israel, and when Germany was also seeking to help destroy the United States, another of its targets, it turned to what was called by Haushofer the colored world, or people of color, in many of the countries that had been colonized by, among other countries, the United Kingdom, and that also were believed by Haushofer and related elements to be of potential use in the struggle to annihilate the Jews and to ultimately destroy the United States. And it is in the context of Nazi geopolitics that Islamofascism, not Islam, but a fascist element within Islam, is to be considered. And it is in this context that al-Qaeda, which rails against the United States and Israel, and which has documented Islamofascist connections, must also be considered. We're going to take a look at Johann von Leers, now or later Omar Amin von Leers, and we're going to turn to a remarkable book, one of the best books ever written about fascism. This book is Dreamer of the Day, subtitled Francis Parker Yockey and the Postwar Fascist International. This book is authored by the brilliant Kevin Coogan and published in soft cover by Autono Media Incorporated, copyright 1999. The book was also edited by Dave Mandel, an on-air personality at sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. Now, returning to the subject of Nasser's Egypt and the Nazi emigre community that was inextricably linked with not only Nasser's national security establishment, but also his anti-Semitic propaganda establishment, we're going to take a look at von Leers, and we're also going to take a look at a letter that was written by von Leers to his fellow Nazi intelligence operative, H. Keith Thompson, a post-war Yale graduate who also has links to the world of Francis Parker Yockey, an American fascist and one of the most important operatives on behalf of the Third Reich and its underground post-World War II manifestation. Turning out to Dreamer of the Day by Kevin Coogan of von Leers, we read, not long after Nasser consolidated his hold on power, Johann von Leers moved to Cairo to help run Egypt's propaganda apparat. After converting to Islam, he changed his name to Omar Amin von Leers, unquote. General Otto Raymer also found sanctuary along the Nile. Raymer fled to Egypt after being threatened with arrest in Germany for his involvement with the Radical Right Socialist Reich Party, or SRP. He then helped train Egyptian commandos and Algerian guerrilla fighters in a base at Abbasia, Upper Egypt. In a June 1953 interview in Der Weg, he called upon all, quote, German patriotic forces, unquote, to aid in the creation of a strong Arab army. Now, again, just add about 38 years to this, and one can perhaps understand Al-Qaeda and bin Laden as a geopolitical phenomenon. Continuing. Other German advisors trained Palestinian refugees for commando raids against Israel. With help from German military and technical advisors, Egypt soon became a vital support base for Algerian, Moroccan, and Tunisian guerrilla fighters fighting against France, as well as for anti-British movements in Aden and the Mau Mau insurgency in Kenya. The Nazi-Nasser Axis, a post-war continuation of Haushofer's policy of alliance with the colored world, unquote, was evident in the strange mix of fascist, geopolitical, and anti-imperialist rhetoric that flowed from von Leers' pen. In an August 8, 1958 letter to H. Keith Thompson, Leers explained, quote, "One thing is clear, more and more patriot Germans join the great Arab revolution against beastly imperialism. In Algeria, half a company of German soldiers, dragging with them two French officers and two non-commissioned officers, have cut their throats in the view of the Algerian revolutionaries and have gone on the side of the Algerians and have embraced Islam. That is good. To hell with Christianity, for in Christianity's name, Germany has been sold to our oppressors. Our place as an oppressed nation under the execrable Western colonialist Bonn government must be on the side of the Arab nationalist revolt against the West. Let Adenauer be furious that honest German patriots are not extradited to him or to his British or American bosses by those freedom-loving Arab countries. May the British swine call us meddlers. In a short time, British meddling in the Middle East will be over, as it has finished in Iraq, where the infidel servants of British imperialism are all killed. E. Hamoud al-Ul-Allah. The backing given by USA to the Jewish tyrants in Germany will make the German nation revolt. Indeed, for our nation there is only one hope, to get rid of Western imperialism by joining the Arab-led anti-imperialist group." That, again, from a letter from von Leers to H. Keith Thompson, and I think one can perhaps see the seed ideology, so to speak, for Al-Qaeda in this particular letter. Continuing with Coogan's text, Dr. Fritz Grobe was another ally of both the Arabs and the Kremlin. A German Lawrence of Arabia, unquote, Grobe had been the Nazi ambassador to Baghdad in 1940 when German intelligence backed an attempted anti-British revolt by Rashid Ali al-Gailani. By the way, as we've looked at in For the Record 287, annotated on the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com, one of the top aides in the anti-British pro-Nazi uprising of Rashid Ali was a fellow named Khairullah al-Tufa, an Iraqi army officer who was also the uncle of and the political mentor and basically the guardian of Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein, by the way, has Hitler's original Mercedes. And again, this in the context of Islamofascism. Continuing. In his book Blowback, Christopher Simpson reports that Fritz Grobe turned his entire espionage network over to the Russians in 1945. Grobe then became a special advisor to the Soviets on Mideast affairs in 1951. According to the German press, Grobe even brokered the first meeting between Soviet emissaries and the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. By the way, I would add that there are underground Reich, profound underground Reich, and Yaqiite connections to the former Soviet Union. That is one of the reasons why it is the former Soviet Union. and it is to be hoped that people in positions of responsibility, including and especially U.S. intelligence, take stock of the former Soviet example in affecting some of the, or dealing with some of the liaisons that have been formed by this same milieu and the United States, and that have, in my opinion, doubled on the United States in the September 11th attacks. Continuing with Kevin Coogan's text, another key figure in German intrigue in the Middle East was Hjalmar Schacht. He, by the way, was the former Nazi finance minister. He first came to Egypt as General Naguib's guest of honor after the coup against King Farouk. Schacht's most daring Middle East power play was the Jeddah Agreement between German industry and Saudi Arabia in January of 1954. Under the terms of the deal, Saudi Arabia agreed to establish a fleet of supertankers to be built in German shipyards that would carry Saudi oil around the world. Aristotle Onassis was chosen to manage the shipping side of the operation. Besides making the Ruhr industrialists fantastically wealthy, Jeddah threatened to break the Seven Sisters Oil Company's hegemony over the distribution of Middle East oil. The Jeddah Agreement was ultimately blocked by the Western oil cartel with help from the CIA. Yet Alan Dulles' CIA was surprisingly hesitant to confront Schacht. I would add, of course, that Alan Dulles is deeply connected to not only King Ibn Saud of Saudi Arabia, but also to the elements associated with him, including the Grand Mufti, and also the Bush family on this side of the Atlantic, and those connections have ultimately been propagated around the world. And over the years, of course, the Bush family has strong business connections to the Bin Laden family, as we've looked at in numerous broadcasts in this series and in other programs in the For the Record series. I would note that Jeddah, Saudi Arabia, the epicenter for this interdicted Jeddah agreement, is not only the capital for the Bin Laden business empire, but is also the financial capital of Saudi Arabia. Now, once again, jumping to the present, bear in mind the Ali Rashid uprising against the British that was undertaken by the Third Reich. It was unsuccessful, but as I mentioned, one of Ali Rashid's top aides was Khairullah al-Tufa, Saddam Hussein's uncle, the person who raised, for all intents and purposes, Saddam Hussein and his political mentor, and he was pro-German, and the German/Nazi connections to Saddam Hussein have extended into the present period, as we've looked at in numerous broadcasts, including For the Record Program 287 and 295. The Financial Times of Thursday, November 29th of 2001, carried an article about some of the German reaction to reports that the United States might undertake a military action against Saddam Hussein after concluding the Afghan episode. The following article is a Reuters report from Berlin. It's headlined, Berlin Warns U.S. on Iraq. It reads in part, Germany warned the U.S. yesterday against expanding its war on terrorism in Afghanistan to countries such as Iraq and Somalia, Reuters reports from Berlin. Once again, I've noted the profound German connections to the September 11th attacks. I talked about those in, among other broadcasts, For the Record 326, 331, and 335, and then 336 as well. Once again, one wants to maintain the awareness of geopolitics as it relates to Islamofascism. What we're going to do next is to take a look at the links between Johann von Leers and a pro-Nazi post-war publication called Der Weg and Peronist Argentina. Once again, turning to Kevin Coogan's Dreamer of the Day, we read of von Leers and his activities in Argentina. After Germany's defeat, Leers helped organize Nazi escape routes to Latin America. There is little doubt, unquote, writes historian Kurt Tauber, again quoting, that from the very beginning, von Leers played a considerable part in the organization and running of the Underground Railroad, which permitted the flight of threatened Nazis, unquote. He left Europe for Argentina to become Der Weg's editor in 1950. Der Weg was supported by a group of German industrialists, including Ludwig Freude, whose son Rodolfo was private secretary to Juan Perón. Freude was one of the four financiers who controlled much of the wealth sent from Germany to Argentina in the last years of the war in an operation codenamed Aktion Feuerland. By the way, parenthetically, I would add this will be recognizable to many veteran listeners as part of the Bormann Flight Capital program, about which I've spoken so many times. By the way, this reading of Kevin Coogan's text should not be misunderstood necessarily as an endorsement by Kevin Coogan of the working hypotheses that I present on this program. It's merely making use of the remarkable documentation that he has blessed us with. Continuing. Speaking of Freude, he worked closely with Ricardo Staudt, a German-Argentine businessman, Dr. Heinrich Dorge, a former aide to Hitler's one-time finance minister, Hjalmar Schacht, and Ricardo von Leute, an officer of the Banco Alemán Transatlántico. The Nazi loot was deposited in vaults in the Banco Germanico and Banco Turquist in the name of Eva Duarte, later and better known as Eva Perón. And that, again, about von Leer's activities in Argentina, we're going to jump to the present, and by way of taking a look at some of the geopolitical and Islamo-fascist evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of Argentina and back to the Middle East and to Al-Qaeda, we're going to take a look at an article from the New York Times of Wednesday, November 21st of the year 2001. This is an article by Clifford Krause of the New York Times, Dateline Buenos Aires, Argentina, November 20th, headlined, Court ruling in arms case frees Menem in Argentina, and it reads in part as follows. Former President Carlos Saul Menem was released from house arrest today after the Supreme Court ruled that prosecutors had failed to prove that he and his former brother-in-law were involved in a conspiracy to smuggle arms to Croatia and Ecuador between 1991 and 1995. Skipping down, today's ruling dropped charges of illicit association against Emir Yoma, Y-O-M-A, Mr. Menem's former brother-in-law and business associate, who prosecutors said was put in charge of a gun-running scheme by the former president. But by ruling that there was a lack of evidence, the court, by implication, extended the decision to Mr. Menem, who had been under house arrest since June in a friend's house outside Buenos Aires. Well, we looked at Yomagate, as this overlapping network of scandals was called, and the fact that several of the key witnesses either recanted or allegedly committed suicide, including someone named Alfredo Yebrán. What we're going to look at now is, actually what we're going to listen to, is an excerpt of For the Record program number 109, which in turn was excerpted in For the Record broadcast number 330, and we're going to listen to the reading of an article from Clarín from August 2nd of 1998. This, in turn, this particular article was researched for us by Dave White, and it deals with the potential visit of Manzar El-Kassar to Argentina. And what we're going to listen to are the links between Argentina and Syria, and in turn, the allegations of a connection between Manzar El-Kassar and two bombings that occurred in Argentina, that of the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires in 1992, and also of the AMIA Jewish Cultural Center in 1994, the latter being, among other things, a repository of documents on Nazi war criminals in Argentina. We've also looked at links, evidentiary tributaries connecting the AMIA bombing with the Oklahoma City bombing, which in turn has links to September 11th. We also, in For the Record program number 328, looked at alleged links between both of those Argentinian bombings, the bombing of the Israeli embassy in 1992 and the AMIA Cultural Center, to the Al-Qaeda network and to the attacks of September 11th. Bear in mind that key Syrian-born Iran-Contra operative Manzar El-Kassar had his name linked to both of the attacks in 1992 and 1994. He has denied those allegations.
Furthermore, Al-Kassar has admitted having ties to pro-Iranian groups like Hezbollah in Lebanon. Government officials fear that while Al-Kassar is improving his image, he will be damaging the image of the president. In addition, Al-Kassar's presence could again push forward the Syrian trail to the two biggest terrorist attacks in Argentine history. The Syrian Trail is the theory of Judge Juan José Galeano. It supposes the existence of support by Syrian sectors, along with pro-Iranian groups, in setting up the attacks. The key to explaining part of the origin of the attacks is understanding the complete scheme of powerful persons, the complex scheme of powerful persons close to President Menem. Al-Qassar was born in Yabrud, Syria, that's Y-A-B-R-U-D, a few meters from the home of the family of Menem's ex-wife, Zulima Yoma. Al-Qassar's friend Ibrahim al-Ibrahim, a Syrian intelligence agent, moved to Argentina in 1987. He married Zulima's sister, Amira, and was assigned to a key customs post at Aziza Airport. Franco Caviglia, whom Al-Qassar is suing, maintains that al-Ibrahim was on duty when the exogene shipment arrived. At that time, the airport warehouses were controlled by Alfredo Yabron, who was also from Yabrud, Syria. Yabron had planned to flee to Damascus before his suicide on May 20th. So
that, again, excerpted from For the Record program number 109. That same excerpt was in For the Record program number 330. Bear in mind that Emir Yoma, Menem's former brother-in-law, was born in Yabrud, Syria, the birthplace of Manzer al-Qassar, the birthplace of Syrian intelligence official and al-Qassar, Ibrahim al-Ibrahim, who in turn was married to the sister of Menem's former wife. Bear in mind that that same little town in Syria, Yabrud, was also the birthplace of Alfredo Yabron, who ran the airports at the Buenos Aires airport where the explosives for the two bombings were allegedly brought in by Manzer al-Qassar, and that Ibrahim al-Ibrahim then moved to Argentina and was working at that very same airport. Bear in mind also the allegations of an al-Qaeda connection to both of those two bombings. We're going to review an article from For the Record program number 338. This is from the Los Angeles Times of Tuesday, November 13th of the year 2001. This reviews a Syrian link to the bin Laden family. This article is Dateline Latakia, Syria, and it's by Michael Slackman of the LA Times, headline, Family Ties That Bind and Bedevil. Skipping down. Najwa Ghanem's family is terribly worried about her safety. Not only is the mother of 11 living in the Taliban-controlled section of Afghanistan, she is married to the world's most wanted man, Osama bin Laden. Skipping down again. The Ghanem family has a double-sided bond to bin Laden. His wife and her siblings are also bin Laden's first cousins, a common phenomenon in the clannish world that exists both in Saudi Arabia and among the extended families of this part of western Syria. So while Ghanem's brothers and sisters are worried for her, they also are supportive of their cousin, whom they spent summers with as children riding horses, swimming in the Mediterranean, and picking fruit in the orchards that blanket the countryside. While much attention has been focused on bin Laden's Saudi ties, his Yemeni father, who founded a Saudi construction empire, his 53 brothers and sisters who control a multi-billion-dollar fortune, bin Laden's maternal line has been comparatively ignored. And skipping down in this article, speaking of the fact that his ex-wife and first cousin comes from the city of Latakia, this city of 320,000 is a stronghold of the Alawite sect, an offshoot of Islam that controls Syria's government and security forces. And the Argentine link there to that same milieu is one that should not be forgotten. We're going to review another article from the aforementioned For the Record 338. This from the Financial Times of Thursday, November 29th of 2001. This is an article by Mark Huband talking about bankrolling bin Laden. And skipping down of Al-Taqwa, we read, since September 11th, such global links have continued to be unearthed. In early November, U.S. authorities included Al-Taqwa, by the way, that's the group to which Ahmed Huber belongs, a Swiss-based financial services company, on its third list of accounts to be frozen because of suspected links to terrorism. Galeb Himat, the company's 63-year-old Tunisian-born executive and a board member of the Geneva section of the Kuwait-based International Islamic Charitable Organization, was also on the list. Himat denies any connection with Islamic militancy. However, a German intelligence report says the Munich-based Islamic Community of Germany, whose president is Himat, expressed, quote, pleasure, unquote, over the September 11th attacks at a closed meeting. Much of the military experience of the current generation of fighters who have joined al-Qaeda was gained in Bosnia, where Muslim forces and communities have received millions of dollars of funding from Iran, Saudi Arabia, and other countries. Skipping down, Saudis pumped more than $600 million into Muslim efforts in Bosnia, $380 million of it from individual donations, the rest from the government. We're going to review briefly an article that we've looked at, an element we've looked at before. This is an article by British intelligence analyst T.W. Bill Carr. It's headlined, the article, this white paper is titled German and U.S. Involvement in the Balkans, a Careful Coincidence of National Policies. And this concerns the Islamic declaration of Bosnian President Alija Izetbegović. Bear in mind the Bosnian connection to al-Qaeda, as well as the al-Qaeda connection, alleged connection to al-Taqwa, and the milieu of Huber and von Liers. As we've looked at in, among other programs, For the Record 330, Alija Izetbegović, the president of Bosnia, was, as a young man, a member of the 13th Waffen-SS Division, or Hanjar Division, a Bosnian Muslim Waffen-SS Division recruited by the aforementioned Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. Of Alija Izetbegović, Islamic fundamentalism, we read, at the same time, Alija Izetbegović, who had been released early from jail in 1988, serving only 6 years of a 14-year sentence for pro-Islamic, anti-state activities, visited Islamic fundamentalist states in the Middle East, returning to Bosnia-Herzegovina to found the SDA, or Muslim Party of Democratic Action. His 1970 manifesto, Islamic Declaration, unquote, advocating the spread of radical pan-Islamism, projected Islam throughout the world by force if necessary, was reissued in Sarajevo at this time. His Islamic declaration is imbued with intolerance toward Western religion, culture, and economic systems. This is also the theme projected in his book, Islam Between East and West, first published in the U.S. in 1984 and in Serbo-Croat in 1988, shortly after he was released from prison in the former Yugoslavia. In his writings, he states that Islam cannot coexist with other religions in the same nation other than as a short-term expediency measure. In the longer term, as and when Muslims become strong enough in any country, then they must seize power and form a truly Islamic state. And reviewing an aspect of the anti-Soviet effort in Afghanistan, turning once again to The Beast Reawakens by Martin A. Lee. Speaking of the World Muslim Congress, based in Pakistan, the World Muslim Congress was initially headed by the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, who, like his friend H. Keith Thompson, stood by the Third Reich until his death in 1974. And after discussing Saudi funding for the World Muslim Congress, skipping down, we read, soon, the World Muslim Congress began working closely with U.S. intelligence and Pakistani military officials who were covertly supporting the Afghan Mujahideen in their fight against the Soviet-installed regime in Kabul. This effort was strongly endorsed by Dr. Inamullah Khan, who served for many years as the Pakistani representative to the Nazi-infested World Anti-Communist League, which played an important role in the Reagan administration's secret war, unquote, in the Golden Crescent. And it was that organization, the WMC, and the anti-Soviet Afghan war that saw the genesis of Osama bin Laden, the Grand Mufti, the founder of the 13th Waffen-SS Division, that had in its ranks Alija Izetbegović, the now current president of Bosnia. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 340, Mein Jihad, Islamofascism and Geopolitics. This is being recorded on December 9th of 2001. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.